there's a real question about whether there's a massive shift happening now in terms of world alliances long term.
Well, it's definitely, I think, a new world order.
Battle lines for a new world order based on power.
The new world order.
Because you really need to bring China into the creation of a new world order.
I think the president has sought to it. There's a new world order in trade. There's a new world order in globalization and the way that we invest in our economy versus, you know, foreign supply chains. There's a new world order, and the president is willing to shake up some old alliance structures. I mean, NATO, I think, is much different because of the president's leadership than it was 10 years ago. It was sort of coasting. It was effectively a protectorate of the United States of America. Obviously, you saw what happened in Venezuela. So, yeah, the president is putting a stamp on world history.
This clip went super viral, and I had people tagging me to it saying, what do you say to this? You know, you like J.D. Vance. Here he is saying he's for the New World Order. You have to go off what the policies are to decide if they're New World Order. And the Rockefellers and the globalists for 80 years have been calling this corporate British Empire, U.S. Empire, neoliberal system the New World Order. That means the carbon taxes. That means the UN being in charge, the World Economic Forum calling the shots, BlackRock being in total control, the whole Bill Gates, Rothschild, Rockefeller, international neoliberal order that they had established, that they admit is totally in trouble. Everybody's turning against them, regardless of Trump.
I see the need for a great reset. So people assume we are just going back to the good old world which we had and everything will be normal again. This is, let's say, fiction. It will not happen.
We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other publications whose directors have attended our meetings and restricted their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march toward a world government.
Let's start with a term that we're hearing quite a bit about in the last couple of years, the New World Order. We like to say in this country that we have the ability as Americans to elect. But the problem is we do not have the ability to select. We can only elect, which means that we can only vote for those candidates which are put before us by our masters, our hidden masters behind the scenes.
A new world order can emerge, a new era.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
That system is in free fall collapse. So when you hear the old international order is dead from them, their new world order is dead, you see Putin saying, we now have to work with other nations to build a new world order. You're talking about the new international order.
Before our eyes, a completely novel world order is taking shape, and it's unlike everything that we know from the past. For example, Westphalian system or Yalta system. New powers are emerging. The nations understand more clearly their interests, their self-worth, uniqueness, and identity.
But the public, when the globalists would talk about their plan, they were saying, we control the world, we're establishing a planetary government, our new world order. So you call a new order, whoever it's run by, you can say America fighting off the British, creating the American system was a new world order. And the British wrote, if this continues, our empire will fall. And it did. It took 100 and some years. That's the point, is a new boss, a new system. And there's a lot of the old same globalist players in there trying to salvage this and repackage the old New World Order as the new World Order. And there's a big battle inside the Trump administration on how we form this new system, because a new system is being formed. And I don't just expose the globalist system and other systems, the communist systems. I promote good ones and try to get the public to promote good systems. Team America, Team Humanity. A system pro-God, pro-family, pro-natalist, pro-expansion. That's what I always explain. We can't just oppose the globalist order. We have to promote other systems and popularize those so that we can fill the vacuum with our new world order that isn't a centralized global government, but is nation states working together towards common aims and promoting freedom and justice and soft power.
Bob. Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
Oh, you are Alaskan Native Home. What does that mean?
It means that we have an incentive because of the Alaskan Native ownership. And it can't be protested.
So how do you do that? Because you don't look Native.
I'm not Native, no. Chinooka Tribe.
Chinooka Tribe. But they don't do the work you guys.
They don't do the work. No, they hire people that understand the market.
Mike Montgomery acknowledges that the Native American tribe Chinooka, which owns the company, doesn't do any of the actual work.
There's a requirement for, like, if we're the prime and it's 8A set aside, we have to do 51% of the work.
When the undercover journalist remarks, that is just, quote, on paper, Mike Montgomery chuckles and says, well, yeah.
So 51% has to be performed by us.
On paper.
Yeah. Well.
Compliant of paper.
Yeah.
They're able to obtain contracts, sometimes worth up to $100 million.
A direct award, we can receive up to $100 million. And so they can't, there's no protests, there's no J&A. So, I mean, it's a way for a contracting officer to streamline his acquisitions without competition.
That's a
cheating,
beautiful
really.
Place to be in.
It's cheating, but...
He's calling it cheating.
But Ricky, that's a good way of putting it, though. Cheating.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You may remember when we exposed how firms were taking advantage of the Small Business Administration's 8A programs, those programs designed to help the socially and economically disadvantaged small businesses compete in the federal marketplace to win no-bid federal contracts, only to pass most of the actual work to outside subs while pocketing enormous chunks of the compensation for themselves. Now, at the time, we caught executives on tape describing a fraudulent pass-through scheme while sidelining the very communities the program was supposed to serve. Here's a quick recap of our interaction with Mullane Cromwell, Director of Contractors for ATI.
So ATI would do 20%, and their subcontractor would do like 80% of the work.
80% of the work.
Wow. I don't know if you want to share that they do all the work.
No. So we do about 20% of the work.
20%.
Right? And I tell you, pass-throughs are a great thing as well. So a lot of our subcontractors bid on contracts that were perfect in their industry, but because they weren't Native American, they wouldn't win it. So we bid on it for them. They became our sub. And it's an automatic win because of your Native American status.
Isn't that exciting?
Right?
A lot of people don't know that.
I don't think anybody knows that.
And
we want to keep it that way.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Exactly.
Keep it a secret.
Yeah. Exactly.
Now you may be thinking, well, this is a good thing. We're helping the minorities, but as you'll see in just a bit, that's not actually the case. For every $100 that goes to this program, only $7 of that $100 actually goes to the Native American. And this is a huge problem that people don't know about. We imagine the fraud, we have no idea the scale. And just to give you some perspective, the United States deficit is $2 trillion. This program is $100 billion. Kelly Loeffler, the head of the SBA, Small Business Administration, launched an investigation into ATI that very same day. Like every other government program rooted in DEI, the 8A program is rife with grift and fraud. And just 2 days later, Kelly Loeffler announced that ATI had been suspended. ATI and its referenced executives will not be permitted to bid for federal contracts. The work of our team did not only get ATI suspended, but after the full release, the SBA announced that it called the first full audit of the 8A program in nearly 50 years. We've terminated 20% of all firms participating in this, and we continue to review every contractor and contract to cut out fraud, waste, and DEI. Kelly Loeffler also posted about the 4,300 other 8A firms. To root out those bad actors, we've asked all 4,300 firms to submit 3 years' worth of financial documents. And the SBA has moved to terminate over 620 firms in the 8A federal contracting program that refused to turn over those documents. This was actually just last week, just a few days ago. In the wake of this report, we were flooded with more tips than I've ever seen in a single day. And two tribal businesses that seem to be mentioned an awful lot in all of these tips is Chenega and Cherokee.
I give you two companies that you need to also investigate. One is called Cherokee Federal, and the other one is called Chenega.
We understand that Chenega, that's in Alaska, receives $1.4 billion dollars through this 8A program, and it only has 100 members. That's $14 million per member. We also understand that there may or may not be a United States senator, we can throw her picture on the screen, who's opposed to all this reform, and gee, I wonder why. So we went undercover at the Federal Small Business Conference. There were booths for both Cherokee and Chenega. First up, Mike Montgomery, the president of Chenega Architecture and Design, an interior design firm. Mike describes taking advantage of the same 8A set-asides that the ATI employees described. Quote, they hire business executives that understand the federal marketplace. They don't do the work.
So what do you guys do? Michael Montgomery.
Yeah, we do architecture, engineering, design, and design build, construction management.
Do you have many offices?
I have four companies. We do, yeah.
Four companies.
Yeah, but yeah, my back office is in Wharton, Virginia. Actually, our corporate headquarters is in Anchorage, Alaska.
Oh, wow.
We're Alaskan Native Homes.
Oh, you are Alaskan Native Homes. What does that mean?
It means that we have an incentive because of the Alaskan Native ownership with 8A and our ability to direct source contracts at a higher level than a traditional 8A.
So that's the advantage.
That's the advantage, yeah. Right now, DOD, we can do $150 million direct source.
Yes, we do. Automatically, there's no bidding.
And it can't be protested.
So how do you do that? Because you don't look native.
I'm not native, no. No, they hire business executives that understand the federal market space, but the board members are all Alaskans. Chinooka tribe.
Chinooka tribe. But they don't do the work.
They don't do the work. No, they hire people that understand the market.
Mike Montgomery acknowledges that the Native American tribe Chenega, which owns the company, doesn't do any of the actual work. So once again, it begs the question, what exactly is the purpose of these 8A programs? Is the intention just to force ineligible companies to split their profits with a native tribe, which provides zero labor?
Do you subcontract once
you... I do.
But Mike, if you become underneath him like
a
subcontractor, we will do all the work, right? You just manage it to make sure the work is being done.
There's a requirement for, if we're the prime and it's 8A set aside, we have to do 51% of the work. So 51% has to be performed by us.
On paper.
Yeah. Well, you got to stay compliant because you get in trouble.
Compliant of paper.
Yeah.
Now, Chenega is one of the largest culprits in this whole scheme, and the senator from Alaska is opposed to this reform, but some want to reform the program, including putting a cap of $100 million, and 5% must go into community, not into the pockets of wealthy white executives in Washington. One of the other reforms that are being proposed in Washington right now is to redefine what social disadvantage means, maybe also to include white people as being socially disadvantaged. That includes, for example, veteran groups. Veteran groups are at a severe disadvantage when it comes to these sole source contracts. 62% of the 8A money is actually only going to tribal firms. 7% in fiscal year 2024 going to veteran-owned firms. We also spoke to Ricky Longhurst, a senior account executive for Cherokee Federal in Oklahoma. He's not Native American, another Caucasian senior account executive for Cherokee Federal. And in this first clip, Ricky claims that Cherokee Federal, the business, takes 63% of the profits, while 37% goes to the tribe.
Are you a native?
I am not.
I don't have to be a native.
No, yet. No. So we just went there 3 weeks ago for our leadership summit, right? And so we got to go out to the reservation, for the reservation. We've done it in the past, but it just kind of reminds you what you're doing. Think about it, we give 37 back to the tribe for infrastructure, 63% goes back to the business. I know this sounds like a sales pitch, it's not. It's just, it gives us a purpose to what we do in industry.
Notice there that Ricky Longhurst also acknowledges that he is not himself a tribal member. They're never tribal members. In this next clip, Ricky describes that they're able to obtain contracts sometimes worth up to $100 million, and because they're native-owned, there is, quote, no protest, no justification and approval, so it streamlines acquisitions without competition.
We bring on subcontractors based on a need.
Okay.
You know, based on if we have a gap we need to fill. So that's all there is to it. Now, as far as the 8A contract goes, I know you guys have probably heard this before, a direct award we can receive up to $100 million. And so they can't, there's no protest, so there's no J&A. So, I mean, it's a way for a contracting officer to streamline his acquisitions without competition.
That's a
cheating,
beautiful
really.
Place to be in.
It's cheating, but
Ricky, that's a good way of putting it, though. Cheating.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He's calling it cheating. No justification, no approval, no competition. We've got one more clip from Ricky here where he acknowledges that in order to make their 51% requirement on paper, they essentially just put a program manager on site with the sub. The undercover journalist asks, so that's why you have PMs, project managers on site to monitor, but the sub is doing all the actual work? To which Ricky replies, absolutely.
But Ricky, you do a lot of the managing, right, of these big contracts? You manage them?
I don't do that.
But people within Cherokee Federal.
Every contract has a program manager, a project manager. I'm the one out winning the work.
The fact that you have all these subcontractors, that's why you have PMs to go and monitor that. But your subcontractors are performing the actual the contract. So you have somebody from Cherokee on site, and you have the people that do the invoices, but the work is being performed by the subcontractors.
Again, our entire investigation into the 8A program and these companies that use it as a loophole has really exposed the entire program as just an absurd system that doesn't solve any kind of cultural disenfranchisement at all. All it has done is create a Kafkaesque system in which any company seeking to do business has to find a minority owner to even be considered by the government, at which point they just take the majority of the profits, give a fraction to its Native American tribe, and a fraction of it to the sub, while hoarding the majority of the wealth to the
American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on with us today. Happy, what's today? Wednesday. Today's Wednesday. It's been one of those chaotic mornings, as many of you guys know. I just received a statement from the White House. I'll bring it to you in a moment. It's in regards to mass deportations. There's a lot of reports out there saying that Republicans are backing down from that. So I reached out to the White House and said, hey, do you guys want to dispute these claims? Well, we've got comments, and I'll be delivering that to you in just a few moments. Also got the president's schedule. I'll highlight what he's doing today. It's quite the busy schedule. Most importantly, though, we'll give you an update regarding Iran. There's actually a lot of Republicans now coming out and saying, all right, President Trump, you've accomplished what you wanted to accomplish. Now let's get out. I'll bring you the latest in regards to that. We're also going to be diving into the topic of Jeffrey Epstein because there's new developments there that are very deeply, deeply concerning. And that New Mexico ranch apparently is being searched. It was searched yesterday in regards to the potential of two dead children, those specifically being girls, who might possibly be buried on that site. We'll bring you the latest in regards to just that. Plus, it looks like the AG, Pam Bondi, had to actually flee her home in Washington, D.C. We'll detail the very latest on that. And Ed Martin, also over at the DOJ, under attack. This time, though, it's D.C. bar. They're looking to go after him because why? Well, he's President Trump's attorney. And there are a bunch of legal, left-leaning hacks, as I usually do. So we'll get into that in a little bit as well. We'll also be joined by Matt Boyle in the show today. He is the D.C. reporter for Breitbart. He actually did an incredible interview with the president's new pick to run DHS, Mark Wayne Mullins. He's a senator, obviously, a U.S. senator currently, but he's going to be potentially confirmed by the Senate next week. He's having his actual first hearing on that. But there's a lot of details that I'm really excited to have Matt on to talk about today, because he actually did a sit-down interview a couple of weeks ago with Mullins. And it was interesting to sit back and watch Mullen to watch this morning. I was going through it all and they were talking about the CCP threat. And so I think that's probably going to be his focus as he makes his way into this position potentially. So we'll ask Matt about that. We'll also ask Matt, because he's been hyper-focused on the race in Texas regarding John Cornyn and Ken Paxton. John Cornyn actually just released an op-ed in the New York Post, and it's quite laughable given the fact that it's really him begging and pleading, Mr. Ken Paxton, please drop out of the race. That's what he's hoping for, at least. So we got that going for us. All right, folks, we're going to dive into the president's schedule briefly. At right about now, the president is doing something called executive time. Now, that's kind of, they've recently changed that over, just so you all at home know. If it was an executive order being signed, it would say that, but now it's executive time is what's on his schedule. So that's going on right now over at the White House. Then shortly after that, he is actually departing from D.C. and heading over to Kentucky, because he gets expected to participate in a couple of different events over there, local news media, podcast interviews as well. So we'll follow that in case anything breaks from there. But again, the president's very busy as he makes his way over to Kentucky. And speaking of just that, I wanted to get to a very important update regarding President Trump. As many of you guys know, the war between, obviously, and I think that the White House is trying not to say that it's a war, but obviously you just completely annihilated about 90% of the Iranian regime. So for the rest of us sane people, we would probably say, yes, we are at war with Iran at this point. But when you look at all the details, it's quite concerning. And there's certain people who are stepping in right now and they're trying to say, all right, Mr. President, you've accomplished enough. I was watching Josh Hawley yesterday also say just that, the senator, Josh Hawley. It's time now to kind of admit that you won and figure out, get out of Iran option. And it's really important to highlight that, because the Pentagon yesterday reported, and I also reported on my X page as well, they put out information regarding that the amount of injuries that have been, sadly, a part of this Operation Epic Fury. 140 American service members have been injured. It looks like 108 of them are recovering and going to return to active duty. But there's about 8 of them that are actually severe right now. And that's really important for folks to understand before we play clip one, because Senator Rand Paul, obviously someone who's anti-war, wants no part in any of this. Senator Rand Paul actually came out in regards to all of this, and he's sounding off. He wants the president to end all of this. But he's walking us through as to why we're even here in the first place. Take a listen.
As far as the reasons for the war, there have been many different reasons floated, but none of them, I think, have been very convincing. One reason is that we want to free the Iranian people from oppression. I have a great deal of sympathy. I want people to be free around the world. But if our foreign policy is to free oppressed people, I'm not sure where war would end. I mean, there are many people that are said to be oppressed in China, Tibet, the Uyghurs, North Korea, Russia. Where would war end if our goal is to free oppressed people? So I think that goal is too grandiose and would perpetually tie us up in war. Another statement has been made, well, they're a week away from a nuclear weapon. You can take clips from the 90s all the way through the present of people arguing that they're a week away from nuclear weapons. Then there were arguments made, well, their ballistic missiles are almost able to reach the U.S. But then our intelligence countered that and said, really, they would be 6 months to a year if they made that attempt. We were also told their nuclear weapons were obliterated. And now we're told their nuclear weapons are just moments away from being a bomb. So I guess I don't think the arguments are valid. And I think war should be the last resort, not the first resort. A war of choice is not my choice.
Well, I understand that. But, I mean, these are such heavy subjects in terms of the potential for a nuclear bomb for a terrorist nation, the largest or the biggest supporter of terrorist proxies that we've seen. Should we really take that risk?
Well, nobody wants them to have a nuclear weapon, but we were told their nuclear stockpile was obliterated. Their program was completely destroyed 6 months ago. And now we're told maybe it's being resurrected and rejuvenated. So I think it's unclear what the actual truth of that is. Either it was obliterated or they're on the heels of doing it. But we know the arguments that they are moments away from a nuclear weapon have been used repeatedly for decades now. These are not new arguments. And so the question is, what are the limiting rules of engagement? When will we stop having war in the Middle East? Right. I really admired President Trump's rhetoric in both 2016, 2020, and 2024 against being involved in Middle East wars. My fear is that we get drug into a long process here and that chaos results. Order doesn't come from this. Chaos. Most of the wars we've been involved in the Middle East have led to chaos, not more stability.
So what would have been, in your view, the proper response to a rogue nation repeatedly threatening Israel, repeatedly threatening the United States with phrases like death to America while they are building nuclear armament?
Yeah, I think no evidence that a nuclear weapon is being built or close to being built. They were enriching uranium, and they've been willing to negotiate over that for a long time. Now, there's a question of whether or not you can trust them, and most of your enemies you can trust only so far. But there were legitimate negotiations going on. There wasn't a resistance, actually, to negotiation. The negotiations in Oman actually were progressing, and there was a sign that Iran sensed their weakness and that this was an opportune time to obtain a negotiated settlement. Most people don't believe that ultimate, you know, one of the things that's being said now is that we are going for unconditional surrender. That's what we went for in with Japan. And of course, Japan had attacked us. We lost 400,000 soldiers in World War II. And so we fought that to a conclusion of unconditional surrender. But it required two nuclear weapons. Are people prepared to have nuclear weapons demolish, you know, one or two cities in Iran to get to unconditional surrender?
And again, this has been the constant dispute, right? President Trump saying that that is going to be his red line. He's not going to allow the regime to continue to operate, and he wants a surrender that's going to happen. Folks, it looks like it's going to happen. But again, I mean, how much more do we have to keep doing this? I mean, the fact that we have over, 140 injured U.S. service members so far, we brought back, seven deceased service members. The numbers are absolutely devastating. What is the actual cost we're willing to pay on all of this? And I know when the president launched these attacks, he did tell the American people, yes, there will be a significant amount of fatalities. He didn't say significant. He said there would be potentially fatalities, to be factually correct there. But what are we willing to sacrifice for all of this? I think it's really interesting, too, when you listen, and we're going to keep going into this in just a few moments, but when you listen to how Democrats are even talking about this, because it's so bad that a part of me actually agrees with Democrats on the subject matter right now. I mean, there's certain members out there right now in the Senate specifically, and we'll play this clip for you, where it actually does sound rational because it's up to the White House to control the messaging. And the messaging was quite concerning at the beginning of all of this. As we continue to sift through all of this, we're going to walk you through the very latest. I got that for you in just a few moments. In the meantime, though, head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. It is the March mega sale, and it's going on right now. Up to 40% off some of your favorite supplements over at the shop. That includes NAD+, Ultimate Burn, Life Force, Sea Moss Gummies, MK Ultra, and so much more. Head on over right now, thealexjonesstore.com. It is one of the incredible offers we have going on over at the website. So make sure you do just that. We also just launched the Iodine over at the Alex Jones store as well. When you become a VIP member, of course, you get 50% off of that. Today, it is 25% off for everyone else. So why not just become a VIP member when you do just that too, by the way, folks? Let me just tell you, you're supporting our work. We greatly appreciate you for doing so. So head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. We just launched Iodine today. So head on over there and grab that as well.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it, I have for years. But here it is. scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell. And sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway. And a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN Zone website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out, sort of put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think of methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on it since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I went and did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvishowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvishowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvishowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells. The methylene blue and iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're joining us today. A lot going on over here. I have been reaching out to the White House in regards to an Axios report, and I actually just got back a statement from one of their spokespersons. So this is going to be interesting. So let me just backtrack a little bit and walk you through this. What happened yesterday? Well, Axios reported that the White House, through their deputy chief of staff, James Blair, was going around and telling House Republicans during a closed door briefing to pipe down about the mass deportations angle. Now, they think this is what, according to them, not me, they were saying that the push for this was not something that they wanted Americans to be talking about, not to be focused on, because, well, they think that this could possibly hurt them in midterms. Now, obviously, that set off a lot of alarms in my mind, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But the reason why I was so concerned about this, and I did reach out to the White House for a response, is because I heard this clip. We'll play clip 10 for you guys, because it sounds like Speaker Mike Johnson's also backing down from mass deportations because he's concerned about how this will reflect on them in the midterms. Take a listen.
Future. We got a little hiccup with some of the Hispanic and Latino voters, for certain, because some of the immigration enforcement was viewed to be overzealous, and, you know, everybody can describe it differently. But here's the good news. We're in a course correction mode right now. We're going to have a new Secretary of Homeland Security. Mark Wayne Mullen is going to be do a great job in that role. I'm sure that he'll be confirmed by the Senate. He's a thoughtful guy. He'll bring a thoughtful approach. You have somebody like Tom Homan, who has 40 years experience in the field and was decorated by former Democrat presidents for his acumen and expertise. And he went into Minneapolis and brought calm to the chaos there. That's what you're going to see. And
Yeah. So obviously when I heard that, I said, "Ooh, that's not a good soundbite. That's not a good soundbite," because it sounds like he's backing down. It sounds like he's concerned about losing Hispanic voters. So as many of you guys know, I love being the fact checker of the corporate media. Or, you know, because I can't really call it fact checking, only because you don't know if the White House is being honest with you. But I will always be fair, and I'll always ask them for a response. And in that, we got one from Abigail Jackson saying that no one is changing the administration's immigration enforcement agenda. President Trump's highest priority has always been deportations of illegal aliens, illegal alien criminals, by the way. That's exactly how they word it, who endanger American communities. And then they go on to detailing how 70% of those that they've deported are those with criminal records. So the White House is kind of saying, all right, like, not true, I guess you could say. I don't know. It's quite interesting. Quite interesting. Again, we're going to keep following it, because that little snout bite that I heard come from Speaker Johnson, well, it didn't really sound too good. It didn't. All right, let's pivot back to the topic of Iran, because Democratic Senator Chris Murphy, he made a very interesting point. Again, this is a point that I know a lot of people, especially independents, were trying to make in regards to why did we attack Iran? What was the reasoning behind all of this? In clip two, he highlights just that. Take a listen.
What is left? Why are we at war with Iran?
Great question. Yeah, great question. I mean, the simplest explanation, you know, might be the one that they gave 24 hours in, that they've kind of tried to backtrack since then, which is that Israel made us do it, that Bibi decided on this timeline. Netanyahu decided he wanted to attack. And he convinced Trump to join him by scaring Trump into believing that U.S. assets in the region would be at risk. And so Trump was better off just joining Netanyahu. I hope that isn't the full explanation, but you're right. As we are now hearing that the nuclear program is not part of their targeting campaign, as we're now more confident that even harder line leadership is taking hold, as the Strait of Hormuz is, you know, still being shut down, even as we get their Navy, what's left as the explanation? It might just be that Israel forced our hand. And how weak does that make the United States look? How weak are we if our allies can force us into wars of choice that are bad for U.S. national security interests?
Yeah, I think most Americans could back that claim. It is bad for national security interests. Again, we are in the middle of a partial DHS shutdown. Keep that in the back of your minds. Also keep in the back of your minds the fact that, you know, we haven't really deported all of the sleeper cells. We'll get into that in a little bit. But again, I'm going to keep reminding you, only 7.8% of those suspected and known terrorists that were released into the country by the Biden regime, again, that's who they've documented, those are the ones that have been captured. So not even 8%. We're talking 7.8%. That should be scary. That should be very, very scary. You know what should be scarier, though? Learning the president is getting a lot of his foreign policy advice from Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner was someone we were told was not going to have a role in the administration. That's what I thought when he was campaigning. Again, they said, oh, they want to live private life. They don't want anything to do with politics. But of course, now that he's won, Jared Kushner seems to be the front and center of a lot of things. And again, there's a lot of questionable business dealings going on there. But President Trump admitted that when it comes to the Iranian threat, the one that he's been pushing, saying that this was an imminent threat, was brought to him by Jared Kushner. Take a listen to clip three.
The situation was very quickly approaching the point of no return, and the United States found it intolerable, in my opinion, based on what Steve and Jared and Pete and others were telling me, Marco, so involved, that I thought that they were going to attack us. I thought they would, if we didn't do this at the time we did it, I think they had in mind to attack us. And
yeah, how horrifying is that, that that is the people who are advising you on the subject matter? Again, he didn't say Pete Hegseth, who's obviously leading the Pentagon. So again, folks, I'm deeply concerned that he's getting bad intel, specifically from people who continue to advocate for the destruction of countries and places in the Middle East, and then find themselves saying, we're going to help rebuild. We're going to help rebuild. Please give me billions of dollars so I can help rebuild Gaza. That's exactly who Jared Kushner is. And again, I don't really think there's any good deed that Jared Kushner is going to do that would not benefit him. And so, yeah, I am deeply concerned about all of this. And I think you should, too, at home. I think you should, too. All right. Now, speaking of deeply concerned, I want to highlight this. I was all in on the Iranian sleeper cell issue, because I do truly believe that this is an issue. I do believe that we've imported people from countries that hate us. Not willingly, but of course, you know, the Biden regime allowed anyone into this country because, well, wouldn't you want to see a terror attack again here on U.S. soil that would allow you to implement policies that would take the rights away of Americans? That is my belief. But when it comes to all of this, now I'm like, is it really a real thing? Because the FBI, their counterterrorism agency, is now warning Americans about the possible threat of Iranians retaliating here on U.S. soil. Now they're saying that these threats could involve activating sleeper cells affiliated with terrorist groups. Could also be the lone wolf sympathizers, which you likely saw in New York City. Now, again, we don't know if they're directly linked to what happened in Iran, but I could tell you that they are directly linked to ISIS. We'll get to that in a little bit. We've got the soundbite for you that details that. But when I walk you through all of this information coming out, understand that this is the FBI now warning the American people that there could possibly be a terror attack here on U.S. soil. And I honestly, anytime I hear about the FBI saying something, I'm like, is it true then? That's how I feel right now. I'm like, I don't know if it's true. So they're calling and they're saying that this is an area of concern. And that's the latest report on that front. Now, there's another report that came out, and this was from the Daily Mail. The White House has blocked a joint intelligence bulletin that was prepared by the FBI and DHS and National Counterterrorism Center that warned state and local law enforcement of a heightened domestic terror threat that could possibly be carried out here in the United States. According to the Daily Mail, the five-page report detailed potential attacks by Iranian proxies and radicalized individuals. Now, this could be threats to the military personnel. This could also be government facilities, any type of Jewish or Israeli institutions. And that's what they were apparently looking to warn and put out that signal about. But they claimed the White House shut it down. Now, this is interesting, because I remember we played the clip for you, too, when President Trump was specifically asked about the sleeper cells. He was very hesitant, and he's not normally hesitant. He's very careful with his wording and saying, we're watching them. But then DHS Secretary Kristi Noem, when testifying in front of the Senate and House, did specifically say that she doesn't know where these people are. And again, I don't hold that to her. I do believe that that is probably the truth in all of this. But she is, too, someone who is very hesitant to answer any questions related to this. So I didn't reach out to the White House on that report. But I could tell you that based on the response from both individuals, both Kristi Noem, both President Trump, I could tell you there was an ounce of hesitancy, because I don't think they want to detail specifically what that threat is. Now, again, I got that figure, that 7.8% figure of suspected and known terrorists being kicked out of the country, based on a very specific question I asked. And then I ran it past what we know from Joe Kent's office. And that's how I got to that number. So I think the White House understands that they haven't quite crunched down on that threat yet. But they also don't want to stir up any type of panic in this country. And listen, I don't care for that. I don't care about public perception. You know, we do what we do because we want the American people to protect themselves. And so I don't think they want us talking about the potential terror attacks that could happen here. Why did it take the FBI this long to come out and talk about this? Again, it doesn't seem to make any sense from that angle. We're well over a week into the attacks in Iran. We've known about this for quite some time now. And again, I've asked for the specific numbers of how many Iranians or Iranians tied to the regime have been arrested and deported. And I remember when you go into the Wayback Machine of just last year when we first carried out those strikes in Iran, I remember DHS, and I reported it to you guys as well, putting out specific press releases that highlighted how many Iranians were arrested. But then all of a sudden, those numbers stopped coming in. Those stories stopped coming in. The most recent report that I had to reflect on was back in January of this year, where they arrested three of those individuals. And they specifically had ties to the Iranian regime. And they outlined that for us. But again, those numbers are significantly small, considering to the threat that we know based on what Joe Ken has put out there. And the Biden regime, their DHS even admitted to, yeah, well, we did release. They only admitted to a couple of hundred. And then Joe Ken said, no, there's a couple of thousand, actually. So it's all very, very concerning. Very, very concerning. Ted Cruz is also out there talking about this threat and says that the United States should prepare for potential sleeper cells to be activated. Again, we've heard from our government, and our government says everything's okay. Don't worry. Don't panic. But just be on high alert. The president of the United States also is saying that we've intercepted some of those messages as well. But take a listen to what Ted Cruz was alerting to the American people in clip four.
Are you concerned about sleeper cells? There's been discussion of that.
Look, the risk of terrorism right now is quite high. We tragically saw in Austin, Texas, just last weekend, we saw a terrorist attack. We also saw another terrorist attack in New York City. There is a heightened danger of terrorism right now, and I will say it is particularly indefensible that Democrats have shut down the Department of Homeland Security while we are facing an enhanced terrorist risk. The Department of Homeland Security exists to guard against terrorist attacks. The danger has never been higher than right now, particularly after 4 years of open borders under Joe Biden. We know that radical Islamic terrorists entered this country, and there's a vulnerability all across this country. It is disgraceful and indefensible for the Democrats to vote party line not to fund the Department of Homeland Security right now. We need to open it up and fully fund it.
Got it. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. By the way, in Canada right now, there's been warnings that were pushed out. I know yesterday I was reading the National Pulse, which detailed in Canada that they believe that there's about 700 of these potential sleeper cells currently in Canada. And again, I've spoken about it. I've spoken to DHS officials. The Canadian border, the Canadian U.S. border is by far one of the most unsecure borders. It's actually far more unsecure than the Mexico-U.S. border. And I know a lot of people don't really understand how that's possible, but the Canadians don't care about patrolling the border, of course, because no one's going up from the United States to Canada. In fact, they're going from Canada to the United States. And it's obviously a very large border. And we're strongly relying on local sheriff's offices to patrol that border. But keep in the back of your mind, 700 was the last figure they threw out there. Now, why am I saying that? Well, I'm saying that because there were reports that there was three synagogues over these last few days that were attacked. Apparently, this is in the Toronto area. They're saying that there was three synagogues that were shot at. And that was this month. No injuries being reported there. But then yesterday, police in Toronto, Canada, said they were investigating shots being fired at the U.S. consulate building, which took place yesterday morning. I wanted you to listen specifically to how he words all of this, because I think it's quite interesting. In clip five, take a listen.
Have you got any indication to police that these shootings in the synagogues and this shooting at the consulate are related in any way to the same people involved?
No, we haven't had any information on that. But again, this is just me speaking. I believe there's sleeper cells all over the world, as we know. They're in the U.S., they're in Canada here. And we have to weed these people out and hold them accountable. Because, again, folks, we all grew up here, very peaceful, loving communities all across the province. And And for these people to be doing this, they need to be caught and they need to be thrown in jail for life.
Yeah, who is he talking about there? Who is he talking about there? I wonder who. Yeah, Canada used to be really beautiful and peaceful, like he just alluded to there. But guess what? They imported people that hate them, just like us. And Canada is actually pretty far gone these days. So now you could just assume how bad that threat is actually. And so when we go over this, it's just important to highlight that. Again, our Canadian-U.S. border is very, very open right now. And it's only if, of course, our local sheriffs on that border actually patrol it. I want to pivot a little bit to the New York City ISIS-inspired terror attack that took place. Now, thankfully, nobody was killed in all of this. But it's crazy because this is why politics is so divisive right now, because it depends who your outlet is, right? If you are watching InfoWars, you're going to get a certain angle to it all, but it's the truth. But if you're watching CNN, they don't want to offend people. But most importantly, they don't want to prove our points right. And so they're going to completely leave out certain key facts and stories. They don't want to talk about the fact that those two individuals, those two teens in New York City that decided to throw, and again, we don't even know if they were active bombs. We don't even know how sophisticated they were. It looks like that they weren't that sophisticated, but again, there tends to be a little bit of an over description on a lot of this. I saw IEDs being tossed around there. They didn't look like IEDs, ones that you would see possibly in the Middle East, but again, obviously we all know what IEDs mean, and you kind of get a little fired up over it. But CNN's dancing around the fact that Islam was what motivated those attacks. And it's interesting because Abby Phillip, who is obviously, she pretends to be fair and balanced, right? She hosts a show every night and she goes and she'll step in whenever it's a Republican speaking. She'll cut him off to say, that's not true. And then she wants to pivot. And she tends to dismiss truthful information and tries to write it off as misinformation because, well, either she's ignorant on the subject matter or she's actually just a propagandist. Probably a mix of both. But in clip six, just listen to how she dances around the fact that these were Islamic terrorists. Take a listen.
Two Republicans say Muslims don't belong here after an attempted terror attack against New York's mayor, Zohran Mamdani, and the House Speaker, Mike Johnson, says nothing really to condemn those comments. Another special guest is going to be with us at the table when we come.
Yeah. You notice how she says that it was an attack outside of Zohran Mamdani. She's making Zohran Mamdani look like the victim of all of this. Zohran Mamdani wasn't. There was an anti-Muslim, very small group of people, less than two dozen who were gathered out there to protest, according to reports. And because of that small group of people, that's why they did what they did. They threw it at them. They didn't throw it at Zohran Mamdani hoping to kill him. They threw it at a group of people who were against the Muslim invasion. And so when she sits there and does just that, you've got to be really cautious when listening to CNN. Obviously, our audience is well-versed on this. We say it how it is. I'm not going to sit here and try to appease the jihadists in this country. But that's what she's doing. And again, the NYPD commissioner came out and detailed specifically for you. I mean, I played it for you. CNN sat there and they had to take down a post because it was something about like the beautiful weather outside that day and two teens just getting into a little bit of a dispute. But it just goes to highlight how bad they were trying to downplay all of this. And in fact, the mayor, I don't see the mayor keeping Zohran Mamdani. I don't see him keeping around the NYPD commissioner for very long because she actually dished out the truth as to what the motive behind all of this was. Take a listen to clip seven.
It's Kayumi said in recorded post-arrest statements that he had watched ISIS propaganda on his phone and that his actions that day were partly inspired by ISIS. The complaint also details statements made by Amir Balat after his arrest. En route to the NYPD precinct, Balat made spontaneous statements without being questioned by NYPD officers that were captured on body-worn camera footage. He said, "This isn't a religion that just stands when people talk about the blessed name of the prophet. We take action, we take action." As well as, "If I didn't do it, someone else will come and do it." And later, after waiving his rights, he requested paper and wrote a message declaring in part I pledge my allegiance to the Islamic State. Die in your rage, you kuffar. Now, die in your rage is a commonly known ISIS slogan, and kuffar is an Arabic term that refers to non-believers.
Yeah, wouldn't you hate to call out what this actually all means? Wouldn't you hate to do that? You know, it's crazy, too, because when you sit back and you watch all of this, it's pretty insane, because those over at CNN and other outlets don't want to talk about what the motive behind all of this is. Even Zohri Mahdani himself, the jihadist that was elected, I guess you could say. It's all awful, but this is what I expected. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't expect them to be truthful on any of this. I expected them to downplay all of this because they don't want Muslims in New York City to be targeted. Because Zohri Mahdani continues to go out there and brag about all the new mosques that have popped up throughout New York City, which is devastating for those who actually grew up around the city, worked in the city, enjoyed the nightlife in the city. It was once a beautiful city. Now, can't. Because if it's in Port of the Third World and it's all there. Oh, by the way, the family of one of the alleged jihadists, the 19-year-old, Abraham Kamim, I think is probably how you say it. We'll go with that. Well, his family is worried about him potentially taking his own life, and he said he was, they thought suicidal when he vanished from his home. By the way, they live in I'm not sure if it's this one, but his family lives in a $2.3 million property. Afghans who came to this country, so ungrateful. This is a thank you they gave you. But again, you could sit there and talk about the immigration system, but they are radicalizing these kids online, going to places like allegedly Turkey, like Saudi Arabia, according to reports. And it's very likely that's where they were training. No surprise there. All right, Matt Boyle is going to be joining us in a moment, and I look forward to having a conversation with him on a lot going on right now. We'll also get into the latest regarding Jeffrey Epstein. We've got the latest pieces of information about the New Mexico ranch that was just raided. I'll bring you the latest on that. Plus, the Oversight Committee wants to sit down with the prison guard who allegedly got a $5,000 deposit placed in her account just weeks prior, or days prior, I should say, to Jeffrey Epstein allegedly killing himself. We'll go over that because it's quite interesting, the new information coming out on that front. In the meantime, though, head on over right now, thealexjonesstore.com. It's the March Mega Sale, and it's going on right now. Up to 40% off on some of your favorite supplements over at the shop, so you got to stop what you're doing and head on over there right now. Also, today we just launched Iodine. Head on over. It's 50% off if you're a VIP member. We love our VIP members because you help keep us on air. You're supporting our work, and we're grateful for you, so we're going to pass that on in the form of a discount. 50% off. If you are a VIP member. If you're not a VIP member, you only get 25% off, but we are still grateful for your support as well. So head on over to thealexjonesstore.com today.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down to make us controllable. Now, new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up, go to the UN's own website, they admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where they put in the salt, IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue. And I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexjonesstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better. at thealexjonesstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexjonesstore.com, and I thank you for your support. I'm